was to be married to a very powerful man. Malayadwaja, an inhabitant of the Pandu country. After conquering other princes, he married the daughter of King Vidarbha. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is customary among Kshatriyas for a princess to be offered under certain conditions. For instance, Draupadi was offered in marriage to one who could pierce a fish with an arrow simply by seeing the reflection of that fish. Krishna married one of his queens after conquering 7 strong bulls. The Vedic system is for a daughter of a king to be offered under certain conditions. Vaidarbhi, the daughter of Vidarbha, was offered to a great devotee and powerful king. Since King Malayadwaja was both a powerful king and a great devotee, he fulfilled all the requirements. The name Malayadwaja signifies a great devotee who stands as firm as Malaya Hill and through his propaganda makes other devotees similarly as firm. Such a Mahabhagavat can prevail over the opinions of all others. A strong devotee makes propaganda against all other spiritual conceptions, namely jnana, karma, and yoga. With his devotional flag unfurled, he always stands fast to conquer other conceptions of transcendental realization. So Prabhupada's picking up on the word dwaja, which means flag. So this is Malayadwaja. Whenever there is an argument between a devotee and a non-devotee, the pure, strong devotee comes out victorious. The word pandya comes from the word panda, meaning knowledge. Unless one is highly learned, he cannot conquer non-devotional conceptions. The word para means transcendental, and pura means city. The para pura is Vaikuntha, the kingdom of God, and means. And the word jaya refers to one who can conquer. This means that a pure devotee who is strong in devotional service and who has conquered all non-devotional conceptions can also conquer the kingdom of God. In other words, one can conquer the kingdom of God by kunta only by rendering devotional service. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is called Ajita, meaning that no one can conquer him. But a devotee, by strong devotional service and sincere attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can easily conquer him. Lord Krishna is fear personified for everyone. But he voluntarily agreed to fear the stick of Mother Yashoda. Krishna, or God, cannot be conquered by anyone but his devotee. Such a devotee kindly married the daughter of King Vidarbha. Om Jnana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chukshu Unmiditam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So here we see the fate of Paranjan in his next life. He was born as a lady and he became the wife of this king, Malayadwaja. Now, this is actually very auspicious for him because, as we learn in this verse and purport, Malayadwaja happens to be a very staunch devotee of the Lord. So King Paranjan, who is an allegory, Paranjan means the resident of the city of the body, namely the soul. Despite what we learned in the previous chapters about how he was totally immersed in sensual activities, and underwent great suffering at the time of death and as death approached. Despite that, since he was pious, he was offering sacrifices, somehow he had this good fortune to be born into this family that was he then became the wife of Malayadwaja. Now, there's several parts of this purport that are interesting. First, Prabhupada talks about the way in which princesses were offered or princesses became married. And he refers to several instances from the history in which Draupadi, of course, was offered to the great Kshatriya who could shoot the fish on the ceiling while looking at a reflection. You can imagine how difficult that was. And it was only Arjuna who was able to do that. Krishna himself conquered seven bulls who had broken the arms and legs of other suitors, and he easily expanded himself into seven and tamed them. And he also kidnapped Rukmini, of course. This was another instance of valor. So in this way, the Kshatriyas proved their valor and proved their worthiness of the getting the princess, who was usually very beautiful, very wealthy, very qualified in all ways, as we see all of Krishna's queens were, and certainly Draupadi was. So this is the way in which Malaya Dwaja, who was not only a great devotee, but he was a conqueror of other princes, he was able to get Vidarbhi as his wife here. Now, Prabhupada, I'm sure from the commentaries, has focused in on this word Malaya Dwaja, the name of the king, to describe how he was, to indicate how he was standing very firm with the flag of devotion. The Dwaja is like a flag. And a flag is something that, what is a flag? A flag is something that indicates your loyalty, is something your and your source of strength. It says, Krishna has Garuda. Of course, he has ultimate strength, but he has Garuda on his flag. And with Arjuna, have Hanuman, I believe. And so these flags are kind of a challenge, and a challenge to others that watch out. You know, there's going to be a fight. There is an influence here that is going to conquer you. And so Prabhupada talks about unfurling the flag of Krishna consciousness. And we see that Prabhupada, as a great preacher warrior, actually he, as we know from if we read his books, especially if we hear conversations or read his lectures, he took on all comers philosophically, and he was able to conquer by the strength of his Krishna consciousness and by the strength of Krishna. Now, this conquering, Prabhupada then talks about how Krishna himself is a jita. So devotees are of course, want to be conquered by the Lord, isn't it? Isn't this like a basic principle of devotional service? Surrender means that the person that you surrender to just conquered you. So we want to be Krishna's servants, and we want to be conquered by him. But the wonderful thing is that Krishna reciprocates, as he says in the Bhagavad Gita, so clearly, yatam apapadyanti tam sadaiva bhajamyaham. Now this word bhajami means worship, and it's in the personal, the first person. So Krishna says, as they surrender to me, I worship them. In other words, I reciprocate exactly. So those who agree to be conquered by Krishna and to be his unflinching servants conquer Krishna with that love. And this is very nicely brought out by Lord Brahma in his prayers to Krishna after the stealing of the calves and the Brahma Vimohan Leela. And it's interesting, he talks there about jnana, about knowledge, because Prabhupada is talking here about being armed, if you will, with the philosophy. And, you know, the essential aspect of that philosophy is to be a devotee. It's not that you just know the facts, but that you're actually a devotee and empowered. And with that philosophy of Krishna consciousness, as spoken in the revealed scriptures, one can conquer any other philosophy, spiritual philosophy. But in the verse that Brahma speaks, he says one has to give up all efforts to get knowledge. It's kind of a paradox. So what he says there in the 14th chapter, 10th canto, as jnane priyasam utapasyana manta eva jivanti san mukaditam bhavadiya vartam stane stitak shutikatam tonovan manobi ye prayasho ajita jito pasitai strilokyam. So what Brahma is saying there, first of all, Brahma has a tendency to become proud of his knowledge. You can see why. He's the original created being in the universe. He had the Vedas infused into his heart. He is the source of all of the knowledge that comes down in our sampradaya. He has four heads. He needs all that intelligence in order to create, in order to manage the universe. He's known as Vidhi, the possessor of all knowledge. So naturally he may think, well, I know Krishna. I can see he's not so powerful. He's just a little boy. And so then he has his comeuppance. So what he says here, he says, one should give up all efforts. Prayas. You remember, prayas is something that we're supposed to give up, right, in the Upadeshamrita. So prayas is these very ardent efforts to attain material knowledge, or at best, impersonalistic knowledge. That has to be given up. Gane priyasam udapasya, throw it far away, and namanta eva, surrender. Jivanti sanmukaditam bhavadiyavatam. And one has to follow the path of hearing the pure vibrations emanating from the lotus mouth of the pure devotees. Mukaditam bhavadiyavatam. He's speaking directly to Krishna there. As a little boy with a little piece of fruit and yogurt in his hand, and he recognizes now, oh, this is my father. This is Narayan. He has a verse like that in there. So he's understanding, even though he looks like a little child, that's just his pastime. This is the source of all knowledge. So he's saying, and one has to listen to those activities, listen to those vibrations that are describing your activities. Bhavadiyavartam. And you don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to take sannyasa. You don't have to do anything. Just sthane sthitak. But follow this path of hearing, shudigatam. And how? Tanu van manobhir. With your body, your mind, and your words. In other words, it's not just some superficial hearing, but the hearing is in that mood of submissive oral reception that Prabhupada talks about in his books. And this is this shushu shor we hear about in the very second verse of the Bhagavatam. Hearing with rapt attention, taking the instructions and the knowledge within the heart, and then living it. Doing what is necessary to go on the path according to that knowledge. So therefore, tanu van manobhir, with one's body, one's senses, one has to serve Krishna. With one's voice, one glorifies Krishna. And with one's mind, one thinks of Krishna. So in this way, serve those vibrations. These vibrations are here in this book, isn't it? Prabhupada spoke all these. They emanated from the mouth of the pure devotee. And so they're all there in Prabhupada's books. This is why they're so valuable. And if you do this, then the implication is then you'll attain love for Krishna. And by that love, which is after all our final goal, one will conquer the unconquerable Lord. And the perfect example, of course, is Yashoda, Mayi. Who could love Krishna more than Yashoda? And by that love, she was able to conquer him so much that she was able to tie him up and to chastise him and in this way lovingly control him. So now how does that relate to this going out and conquering the opposing philosophies? This is really where the battle is joined, isn't it? The battle is joined in this world, of this Kali Yuga, with all the false philosophies that people follow and therefore become bewildered and never come to the lotus feet of Krishna, never come to the truth. Right? We all understand this is the absolute truth that we've been given, great value, treasure. But there's all these competing philosophies, even if people don't know that they're following a philosophy. You know, it's been given a name, the maiden philosophy, hedonism. it makes it into an ism. It sounds like some kind of philosophy. It's what we hear about all the time. Nunam pamata kurde vikama indriya pritaya apanoti. Indriya priti means the philosophy of enjoying the senses as much as possible. Prabhupada talks about Charvak Muni, right? So Charvak Muni was a philosopher. All these philosophies were spoken of in the Vedic times. Where his philosophy was, look, you don't have, and there's nothing after death. That's pretty obvious, right? You burn the body and it's gone. And everyone says, yeah, looks like that. That looks like the truth. Then here's what you do. You just try to enjoy as much as possible. Beg, borrow, steal, ghee, cook with ghee, and in this way, this is the standard of enjoyment. And you can expand it to everything else. You only go around life once, so you might as well enjoy as much as you can. Isn't that what we see outside us? Outside this world. Who is really thinking of the implications of their activities? There are some who are thinking. But the predominant philosophy, if you will, train of thought, the mode, the paradigm by which you live, in which you see the world and you see yourself, is one of enjoying as much as possible. And so that is a philosophy that we have to combat. Prabhupada was at war with that philosophy constantly. You hear his lectures, every single lecture practically deals with this. And it's not just the lectures, it's right in the Bhagavatam. The whole pastime of Paranjan is meant to convince us that this is not what we should do. What was Paranjan's, you know, main activity? He was expanding his enjoyment. He was completely bewildered by female form, and we know that it was the mode of his intelligence and the mode of passion, right? There's relation there. And he expanded and expanded, right? He had so many children, so many grandchildren. He had so much money. He had so much responsibility. And this was always impinging on his mind. And he was thinking while he was doing this is what it means to enjoy. you know? And gradually, the daughter of time, right, Kalakanya, whom nobody wants to touch, she forces herself upon you. In other words, old age, disease, and death started coming upon him, and he was fighting it with all his might of that snake, right, life heirs. But no one can win this battle. And so he was conquered. He was conquered due to his absorption in the mode of passion and in the mode of enjoying. So everybody in this world is being conquered. They're all being conquered by the soldiers of time, the soldiers of old age, disease, and death, and the threefold miseries. And meanwhile, they're trying as much as possible to enjoy and counteract those miseries. And what does Prahlad say? Dukkha Aushadam Tadapi Dukkham. The very remedies for the misery cause more misery. Isn't it obvious? What is this climate change problem? Right? Climate change means, oh my goodness, we're burning too many fossil fuels. Yeah. Everybody wants to drive a car. Everybody wants to stay warm. Everybody wants to light the lights. Everybody means all those billions in China and India. So what are they going to do? They're going to burn coal. They're going to burn oil. They're going to burn gasoline. And what's going to happen? Nature, gradually, it heats up, and now there's a big disaster. What's going to happen? Da, 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 da. So we have to counteract it. We want to keep driving our cars. We want to keep the lights on. We want to keep living our too opulent lifestyle. But we don't want the negativity. So they're going to come up with something that they think will solve the problem. But already the gasoline and the oil was to solve another problem, right? Is that we're just walking around in horses. They want to go faster and they want to do electricity and so forth. You see the fallacy of it. It's right there in the Bhagavatam. So what is our defense? First of all, what is our defense against these enemies? As we know from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, the real enemy is in our heart, not out there on the battlefield. The real enemy is, who said? Who knows? Yeah, the uncontrolled mind is an enemy. That's in the sixth chapter. And in the third chapter? Kama, material desire in all of its ramifications is our enemy. So the solution is not to surrender to the enemy, right? And to try to fulfill those desires and create more desires, never satisfied, burns like fire. That's Paranjan's path. That was Paranjan's path. And what happened to him? He's bound up, suffering so much, now he has to go through again. Eventually, it has a happy ending, but look at all the suffering he had to go with. So our defense against this enemy is the nectar of devotional service. The pleasures that come from devotional service, from chanting the holy name, preaching, distributing books, distributing prasadam, serving Krishna, that pleasure obscures or cures the disease of lust. That's another way of thinking, a disease that's threatening you. Or it conquers the enemy, isn't it? So, therefore, if we, with all the knowledge in the world, if we don't cultivate a taste for Krishna consciousness, we will be prone to be conquered by material desires. So we have to learn how to relish the chanting of the holy name, relish the kirtans and the festivals and reading Prabhupada's books and the service that we do to see Krishna in that. And this will help us to ward off the insidious enemy of material desire. So what about that knowledge that's supposed to come whereby we also become soldiers in the field to help convince people or to conquer the false philosophies? As Prabhupada said, unfurl that flag, right? Unfurl the flag of Krishna consciousness on the battlefield. That also comes through this process as described by Lord Brahma. Is that giving up the effort to attain some kind of materialistic knowledge on our own, we receive the knowledge from Krishna. And that knowledge comes in through several media. Also, it comes directly, but we can't hear Krishna directly. We can't hear the super soul in the heart. So he comes through the books like Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is speaking to us. Prabhupada makes it very clear in the introduction, the preface, that if one receives the Bhagavad Gita in the mood of Arjuna, it's just like being right there on the battlefield. Haven't we sometimes thought, wouldn't it be nice to have been like hidden away in the corner of that chariot and to hear Krishna speak to Bhagavad Gita? Wouldn't that be exciting? We can do that. That's what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about. These books, this knowledge is not time-bound. It's absolute. It all depends on how we receive it, in what mood we receive it. We'll feel Krishna speaking directly to us. So he gives us knowledge in that respect. And of course, the most important medium is the pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada was able to give us the knowledge in such a way that we could understand it. The first thing is the language. Where would we be now if Prabhupada didn't undertake this arduous translation process? Such an important thing. And not just the translation, but he tailored the message to modern Westerners at first, and for everyone. It's an absolute message. But he spoke in such a way that we could take the message. This is another very important aspect. Time, place, circumstance. How to present Krishna consciousness in such a way that people can become interested and take step two, not just step one, and continue to learn the message. So all of that is the way in which we get knowledge and become armed to fly that flag. We're all meant to be learned in the scriptures that Prabhupada gave us so that we can then confront these false philosophies and defeat people for their own good. It's not that we're trying to defeat them and become very proud and get some signature like the Keshava Kashmiri, the Digvijay. But it's good to be defeated by Krishna, isn't it? That's the idea. Arjuna was eventually defeated. He was arguing, and then he admitted defeat. Because the problem is all of these other philosophies and all these arguments don't solve the problems of life. Right? I used to study Western philosophy when I was a kid, when I was in college. And I remember I didn't get very much past Philosophy 101. But Philosophy 101 was a review of like Western philosophies, you know. And there was, I forget the names, logical positivism, phenomenology, existentialism, of course. Hedonism was in there. You know, it was just like a whole review. The irony was that the teacher was an Indian gentleman who had come to America, studied Western philosophy, and totally given up his, you know, Bhagavad Gita. Or at least he wasn't giving us Bhagavad Gita. So I was trying to find, you know, I was trying to find some ground of ethics. What is right? Because I didn't have any religion. I was a total atheist. So, but I felt the need for something, the right and wrong. I was horrified by the Vietnam War and all of this stuff. Well, what's the ground of ethics? You know, how do you figure out what's right and what's wrong? Isn't that like a human thing to do? Yeah. So I was trying to do that, but these philosophies didn't help me. You know, the greatest good for the greatest number, but what is good? Right? Oh, well, the greatest amount of sense gratification, so let's, you know, feed as many people as possible. You know. But it wasn't it, ultimately it didn't help me. And so I was fortunate enough to come in touch with the devotees and this eternal philosophy and see that the real ground of ethics has to be the absolute person who sets the laws. Dharma tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. How many times did Prabhupada quote this line? Dharma is enunciated by Bhagavan. If you have no conception of Bhagavan, then you have no conception of true Dharma. Everything is relative. Everything is relative. And so, with everything is relative, you know, we have what we have today. You know, your terrorist is my freedom fighter. You know, your land that you have, but it was owned by us 1,000 years ago. Yeah, but before that, in the Bible, it said that we owned it, right? So therefore, what's the basis of what's right and what's wrong? The race, where you're born, you know. That's called Bhoma Ijadi. That's called glorifying the place where you're born, or the race that you're born in, the body, in other words. Total ignorance. So the only ground of ethics has to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The demoniac view is that there is no God. Therefore, asatyam apatishtam te jagadahu anishwaram. There's no truth. There's no cleanliness. There's no right and wrong in them. Right? Read the 16th canto, 16th chapter. So with that kind of philosophy, which is very prominent today, it just becomes your clan, my nation, my tribe. That's what's right. And then anything else goes. You know, we can kill, we can you know, pillage, because it's right. You know, what our particular view of life. So to find that view of what's right and wrong, and to act on that basis, that is the real effort in Krishna consciousness, both for ourselves and for preaching. It's almost a breathtaking thing to realize this is actually the end, the pinnacle of all philosophy. Right? Prabhupada talks about that. There's all these philosophers also in India. But then you come to Vedanta. Vedanta means the end of knowledge, the goal of knowledge. And the end of knowledge is bhakti. So we have Bhaktivedanta. That's Prabhupada's name, Bhaktivedanta. So we're privy to all that. Privy means something private, something confidential. Confidential knowledge, chapter 9, most confidential. So it's paradoxical. Although it's confidential, still it's an open secret. But no one can understand this confidential secret without at least beginning devotional service and coming under the influence of the pure devotee. It was manifest, the Prabhupada's influence manifest in this ISKCON society. So we as the followers of Srila Prabhupada, and that's why I say it before every class, we offer our obeisance to Srila Prabhupada, who's the translator, the commentator, and our spiritual master. Prabhupada is the spiritual master of all of us. Not that because Prabhupada passed away 31 years ago, we're now not his disciples. Disciple in the broadest sense means one who follows. One who follows the philosophy given by someone or follows the example. So all of us are Prabhupada's disciples, not Diksha disciples, but disciples nonetheless. So the duty of disciples is to pick up the mood of the master, spiritual master, guru, teacher, and to follow in that mood and that activity and also the philosophy as given or the words as given. So therefore, as the greatest service we can do is to become, as Prabhupada said, to become well-versed in his books, to distribute his books, and also to convince others of the philosophy given in Srila Prabhupada's books. That is what Prabhupada expected of us, and that's how we all became devotees. Somebody somewhere along the way convinced us, Prabhupada himself through the medium, but also personally. We saw examples. If there were no examples of what was in the books would become like museum pieces. This is what ISKCON is. This is why Prabhupada was so eager to found and to maintain and to have ISKCON flourish, because there needs to be living examples of this philosophy to convince people that it's for real. So this is what it means to raise that flag, the flag of Krishna consciousness. We are responsible for. We're now it. This is the generation. Some of us, we've got a lot of white hair. Every time I come to this festival, I see my God brothers, God sisters. Yeah, getting older, says right there. And we're going to pass from the scene. So we need to, the new generation that comes up needs to become very well versed in the philosophy, strict in the sadhana, advanced, so that they can then carry on and spread the family. It's actually the family of Krishna, welcoming back into the family of Krishna. Thank you very much for your attention. Any comments or questions on these points? Sura Das Prabhu. Ritvikism. You want to repeat that? Because it'll go out all over the...
The philosophy that you were just propounding, that we're all disciples of Prabhupada, can you discriminate between what you just said in two sentences?
Yes,
and
well,
the
two sentences.
Ritvik philosophy that sounds very, very close to what you said?
It may sound very close, but there's a very important distinction. The word disciple has this broader meaning. If you look it up in the dictionary, word disciple, you know, I'm a disciple of Socrates. My brother was a disciple of Socrates for a while. He was thinking of Socrates, reading Socrates, trying to... The idea is that Ritvikism is meant to says that Srila Prabhupada, this day, is a Diksha Guru for everybody, that one can take initiation from Srila Prabhupada in a formal sense, even to this day, and for forever, I guess. That is a bogus philosophy. It is not given in any of our books. It wasn't taught by Srila Prabhupada, and it certainly isn't in our tradition. One has to take initiation from a spiritual master who is present in the ordinary sense of the word. I'm not going to get into semantics now. That's me. That take initiation as it is spoken of, getting the beads, the name, and the taking vows, chanting 16 rounds a day, as Srila Prabhupada set it up in ISKCON. That still has to be there. But we should feel ourselves connected to Srila Prabhupada very intimately through his teachings. What does it mean to be a spiritual master in ISKCON? It means one who is a very faithful disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Then that person is qualified, can become qualified to be an initiating spiritual master. So really, it is getting, it should be getting the same thing, or through that person that we're getting from Prabhupada. Essentially, the same message should be there. And but all of us who are hoping to follow Srila Prabhupada's path back to Godhead should feel that we are disciples in the sense of absorbing the philosophy as given to us by Srila Prabhupada in his books and lectures, letters and conversations, that we are trying to emulate his mood of urgency of preaching and helping others to come to Krishna consciousness. This is the broader sense of disciple. And so that distinction, but the idea that there's never any real and other initiating gurus, and that Srila Prabhupada is the initiator for all time to come, this is not what I understand he wanted us to think about, and it's not bona fide. Yeah. Archita Prabhu. We got the.
Thank you for a very nice class, and it's a good point. Good that you brought up this point, because we see in reality the fallacy of those who claim to be initiating on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, but they very much establish themselves as, you know, big acharyas. In other words, I'm initiating you on behalf of Srila Prabhupada, which means you're essentially my godbrother, but if you cross me in any way, I'll cut you. Forget it. In other words, they establish themselves as being big, big acharyas. The very thing they say they're against. Uh-huh. You know, we don't want any big, big acharyas. Prabhupada is the only acharya, so I'm initiating you on behalf of Prabhupada, which makes you essentially my godbrother, but I'm telling you what to do, and if you cross me, I'll smash you. That's their philosophy.
Right. Inevitably, all of these incompatibilities are what they used to say when I used to study communism. Contradictions come about and eventually destroy the idea. The idea is that we have a, you know, Prabhupada's, and this, taken from Bhakti Siddhanta, was that there is a GBC. In other words, if we're going to have a society in which we cooperate in order to spread Krishna consciousness and join our forces. And that's what, again, back on the battlefield, right? Everyone can't do their own thing. There has to be an authority and has to be in a structure, organization. Then there's the governing body commission. And the governing body commission works in coordination with the initiating gurus, but they're meant to actually follow the mood and the resolutions given by the governing body commission. This is new. This was new with Bhakti Siddhanta. And we know that his followers didn't observe it, and therefore they became scattered and they became ineffective. So this idea of having this authority of the spiritual master, yes, but working under the coordination of a larger body of learned elders, say, that's what it's supposed to be, who embody the ultimate will of the founder Acharya, that is the only way it can go on. Otherwise, there will be, you know, so many little groups scattered, because the chanting, I was thinking about this lately, the chanting of Hare Krishna will go on. It is going on. It is so powerful. And it also gives you power. It gives you, there's a spiritual power there. You may not be chanting purely, you may not be chanting perfect, but there's going to be an effect. And in this way, the chanting will go on one way or another. It's popular. Everyone knows the yoga studios everywhere. It's going on and will continue to go on. But to actually chant, chant according to how it's given it by our acharyas to achieve the goal of the chanting, pure love for Krishna, prema, going back to Godhead, and to spread the message as it's been given in such a bona fide, perfect way by Srila Prabhupada, that requires this organization, requires authority. That was Prabhupada's genius. So, to the degree that we're cooperating, and we're, yes, there are mistakes that have been made, no doubt about it. Big, problems have occurred. But still, by the goodwill and faith of Prabhupada's sincere followers, things are going on and will expand. This is, I think, what ISKCON is all about right now. One more, I guess, or whatever you say. I don't know.
I very much like this point about disciple, because disciple means one who has accepted the discipline that is put forward by the spiritual master. Right. It is not someone who just took an initiation, wrote his name in the book, and so forth, and then went his own way. It's very important for all the new people coming to have that appreciation that I am a disciple in that sense, that I am following the discipline that he put forward. Right. Because the discipline, the rules and regulations, the chanting, this is what it's really all about. It's not about when you came, when I came, who you took initiation from. Those things are all, as you say, a clear via media is putting you back to the original, in our case, founder of our organization, Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah. One comment on that also. There's an aspect of this, having been with Prabhupada or, witnessed or been initiated by him. There is also an aspect of that that's I don't know how to put it. It's a heart thing, and we've seen with so many devotees, a fair number of devotees, who have for years given up the discipline. But because they had, generally they didn't egregiously offend other devotees, especially didn't offend Prabhupada, they were able to come back and, in one sense, take up the discipline again, just by force almost. If you're on your deathbed and you're surrounded by people chanting Hare Krishna, then you're going to hear the holy name and you're not going to perform any sinful activity. So, what puts one in that situation is that there's a connection that you haven't given up. There's a feeling there. So it's not that it's not nothing. In other words, to be connected to Prabhupada through initiation and to feel this warm sense of having experienced some direct thing with him and come back to that can also bring you back to it. But that doesn't negate the point, the basic point, that anyone who follows the discipline of Prabhupada, accepts his instructions, is also a disciple and has a direct connection to Prabhupada in that way. That's important. Yes, please. Two more, and then we'll be done.
Yeah. Well, we can remember that the word disciple is a Greek word. It means circling, like disc. We have the word disc, like disco. Uh-huh. Like the disciples, they circle around the teacher. The teacher has the truth, and then once the students have the truth, then they can break free. But as long as they're circling around, then they're disciples. They circle around the teacher.
Well, we would not exactly give that etymology. Just real quick, and then Amala Bhakti will finish this up. Because we come from Prabhupada explains the word disciple. It's really the word shishya, as given in the seventh verse, second chapter. Shishya comes from the root of shas, which means to be controlled. And Prabhupada gives this nice, explanation. There's three words main words. Shastra, Shastra, and Shishya are all based on that root called Shas. And a Shishya is one who agrees to be controlled by the spiritual master. And, of course, the way in which he does that is through Shastra. In other words, he gives the Shastra, that's Krishna's words. Otherwise, we'll be controlled by Shastra, the weapons, right? The weapons of the daughters of time and all of these things that we see. We have to be controlled. This is our constitutional position. We will be controlled. But if we voluntarily come under the control of Krishna through the instructions of the spiritual master, then we're real disciples. We're real shishyas. And Amala Bhakti, you have the last word.
You pretty much hit on what I was about to say, the last thing that you had mentioned. Whenever Srila Prabhupada referred to his disciples, he meant those, number one, they had made a commitment to follow the teachings, follow certain principles, and that commitment was formalized in an initiation.
Right.
If you were not initiated, Prabhupada did not call you his disciple. Mm-hmm. He would call you his devotee. Now, a devotee and a disciple may be the same, but they may also be different.
Yeah, that was Prabhupada's distinction there. The disciple, Prabhupada, one who has formally agreed and vowed to follow the discipline. Of course, unfortunately, those vows can then be broken later on. And but you know, and Prabhupada, out of his great mercy, said, "Well, you know, if you deviate, then I have to come back. So please don't make me do that, because I've also taken a commitment to deliver you." But he said, "Don't use that you know, caveat. You should rather try to become pure in this lifetime and go back to God." All glories to Srila Prabhupada.